Chapter 10. That night, in the heavy calm before the wind rose, Thomas Hudson sat in his chair and tried to read. The others were all in bed, but he knew he could not sleep, and he wanted to read until he was sleepy. He could not read, and he thought about the day. He thought about it from the beginning until the end, and it seemed as though all of his children except Tom had gone a long way away from him, or he had gone away from them. David had gone with Roger. He wanted David to get everything he could from Roger, who was as beautiful and sound in action as he was unbeautiful and unsound in his life and in his work. David was always a mystery to Thomas Hudson. He was a well-loved mystery, but Roger understood him better than his own father did. He was happy they did understand each other so well, but tonight he felt lonely in some way about it. Then he had not liked the way Andrew had behaved, although he knew Andrew was Andrew and a little boy and that it was unfair to judge him. He had done nothing bad, and he had really behaved very well, but there was something about him that you could not trust. What a miserable, selfish way to be thinking about the people that you love, he thought. Why don't you remember the day and not analyze it and tear it to pieces? Go to bed now, he told himself, and make yourself sleep. The hell with anything else. And pick up the rhythm of your life in the morning. You don't have the boys for much longer. See how happy a time you can make for them. I've tried, he said to himself. I've tried truly and for Roger, too. And you have been very happy yourself, he told himself. Yes, of course. But something about today frightened me. Then he told himself, truly, there is something about every day to frighten you. Go on to bed and maybe you'll sleep well. Remember, you want them to be happy tomorrow. A big southwest wind came up in the night, and by daylight it was slowing with almost the force of a gale. The palms were bent with it, and shutters slammed and papers blew, and a surf was piling on the beach. Roger was gone when Thomas Hudson came down to breakfast alone. The boys were still sleeping, and he read his mail that had come from the mainland on the runboat that brought ice, meat, fresh vegetables, gas, and other supplies once a week. It was blowing so hard he put a coffee cup on a letter to hold it when he laid it down on the table.
"Want me to shut the doors?" Joseph asked.
"No, only if things start to break."
"Mr. Roger gone walking on the beach," Joseph said. "Headed up toward the end of the island."
Thomas Hudson kept on reading his mail.
"Here's the paper," Joseph said. "I ironed her out."
"Thank you, Joseph."
"Mr. Tom, is it true about the fish? What Eddie was telling me?"
"What did he say?"
"About how big he was and having him right up to the gaff."
"It's true."
"God almighty. If that runboat hadn't come so I had to stay in to carry ice and groceries, I'd have been along. I'd have dove right in after him and gaffed him."
"Eddie dove in," Thomas Hudson said.
"He didn't tell me,"
Joseph said, subdued. "I'd like some more coffee, please, Joseph, and another piece of pawpaw," Thomas Hudson said. He was hungry, and the wind gave him even more appetite.
"Didn't the runboat bring any bacon?" "I believe I can find some," Joseph said. "You're eating good this morning."
"Ask Eddie to come in, please."
"Eddie went home to fix his eye."
"What happened to his eye?"
"Somebody balled their fist in it."
Thomas Hudson believed he knew why this might have happened. "Is he hurt anywhere else?"
"He's beat pretty bad," Joseph said, "on account of people not believing him in different bars. People ain't never going to believe him that story he tells. Certainly is a pity."
"Where'd he fight?"
"Everywhere. Everywhere where they wouldn't believe him. Nobody believe him yet. People took to not believing him late at night that didn't know what it was about even just to get him to fight. He must have fought all the fighting men on the island. Tonight, sure as you eatin' breakfast, men'll come up from Middle Key just to doubt his word. Couple real bad fighting men down at Middle Key now and at construction."
"Mr. Roger better go out with him," Thomas Hudson said.
"Oh boy," Joseph's face lighted up. "Tonight's the night we got fun."
Thomas Hudson drank the coffee and ate the cold pawpaw with fresh lime squeezed over it and four more strips of bacon that Joseph brought in.
"I see you were in an eating mood," Joseph said. "When I see you like that, I want to make something out of it."
"I eat plenty."
"Sometimes," Joseph said.
He came in with another cup of coffee, and Thomas Hudson took it up to his desk to answer the two letters he needed to get off in the mailboat. "Go up to Eddie's house and get him to make out the list of what we need to order by the runboat," he said to Joseph. "Then bring it to me to check. Is there coffee for Mr. Roger?" "He had his," Joseph said. Thomas Hudson finished the two letters at the work desk upstairs, and Eddie came over with the list of supplies for the next week's runboat. Eddie looked bad enough. His eye had not responded to treatment, and his mouth and cheeks were swollen. One ear was swollen, too. He had put mercurochrome on his mouth where it was cut, and the bright color made him look very untragic.
"I didn't do any good last night," he said. "I think everything is on here, Tom. Why don't you lay off today and go home and take it easy?" "I feel worse at home," he said. "I'll go to bed early tonight."
"Don't get in any more fights about that," Thomas Hudson said. "It doesn't do any good."
"You're talking to the right man," Eddie said through the scarlet of his split and swollen lips. "I kept waiting for truth and right to win, and then somebody new would knock truth and right on its ass."
"Joseph said you had a lot of them."
"Till somebody took me home," Eddie said. "Big-hearted Benny, I guess it was. He and Constable probably saved me from getting hurt."
"You aren't hurt?"
"I hurt, but I ain't hurt."
"Hell, you ought to been there, Tom."
"I'm glad I wasn't."
"Did anybody try to really hurt you?"
"I don't think so. They were just proving to me I was wrong. Constable believed me."
"Did he?"
"Yes, sir, him and Bobby. Only people believe me, all right. Constable said any man who hit me first, he'd lock him up. Asked me this morning if there was anybody hit me first. I told him yes, but I hit at them first. It was a bad night for truth and right, Tom. Bad night, all right."
"Do you really want to cook lunch?"
"Why not?" Eddie said. "We got steaks on the runboat, real sirloin steak. You ought to see her. I figured to have it with mashed potatoes and gravy and some lima beans. We got that cabbage lettuce and fresh grapefruit for a salad. The boys would like a pie, and we got canned loganberries makes a hell of a pie. We got ice cream from the runboat to put on top of it. How's that? I want to feed that goddamn David up."
"What did you figure to do when you dove overboard with the gaff?"
"I was going to get the gaff hook into him right underneath his fin where it would kill him when he came taut on the rope, and then get the hell away from there and back on board."
"What did he look like underwater?"
"He was as wide as a dinghy, Tom. All purple, and his eye looked as big as your hand is long. It was black, and he was silver underneath, and his sword was terrible to see. He just kept on going down, settling slow, and I couldn't get down to him because that big haft and the gaff was too buoyant. I couldn't sink with it, so it wasn't any use."
"Did he look at you?"
"I couldn't tell. He just looked like he was there and nothing made any difference to him."
"Do you think he was tired?"
"I think he was true. I think he decided to give up."
"We'll never see anything like that again."
"No, not in our lifetimes. And I know enough now not to try to make people believe it."
"I'm going to paint a picture of it for David."
"You make it just like it was, then. Don't make it comic like some of those comic ones you paint."
"I'm going to paint it truer than a photograph."
"That's the way I like it when you paint."
"It's going to be awfully hard to paint the underwater part."
"Will it be like that waterspout picture down at Bobby's?"
"No. This will be different, but I hope it will be better. I'm going to make sketches for it today."
"I like that waterspout picture," Eddie said. "Bobby, he's crazy about it, and he can make anybody believe there was that many waterspouts that time when they see the picture. But this will be a hell of a one to paint with the fish in the water."
"I think I can do it," Thomas Hudson said.
"You couldn't paint him jumping, could you?"
"I think I can."
"Paint him the two of them, Tom. Paint him jumping, and then with Roger bringing him up on the leader and Davy in the chair and me on the stern. We can get photographs took of it."
"I'll start the sketches."
"Anything you want to ask me," Eddie said. "I'll be in the kitchen. The boy's still asleep."
"All three of them."
"Hell," Eddie said. "I don't give a damn about anything since that fish. But we've got to have a good meal."
"I wish I had a leech for that eye."
"Well, I don't give a damn about the eye. I can see out of it fine."
"I'm going to let the boys sleep as long as they can.
Joe, he'll tell me when they're up and I'll give them breakfast. If they wake up too late, I won't give them too much so as not to spoil lunch. You didn't see that piece of meat we got?
No.
God damn, she sure costs money, but it's beautiful meat, Tom. Nobody on this island has eaten meat like that in their whole lives. I wonder what those beef cattle look like that meat comes from.
They're built right down close to the ground, Thomas Hudson said, and they're almost as wide as they are long.
God, they must be fat, Eddie said. I'd like to see them alive sometime. Here, nobody ever butchers a cow till just before it's going to die from starving. The meat's bitter. People here go crazy with meat like that we got. They wouldn't know what it was. Probably make them sick.
I have to finish these letters, Thomas Hudson said.
I'm sorry, Tom.
After he finished the mail, answering two other business letters that he had intended to put off until the next week's boat, checking the list for the next week's needs, and writing a check for the week's supplies plus the flat 10% the government charged on all imports from the mainland, Thomas Hudson walked down to the runboat that was loading at the government wharf. The captain was taking orders from the islanders for supplies, dry goods, medicines, hardware, spare parts, and all the things that came into the island from the mainland. The runboat was loading live crawfish and conches and a deck of conch shells and empty gasoline and diesel oil drums, and the islanders stood in line in the heavy wind waiting their turn in the cabin.
"Was everything all right, Tom?" Captain Ralph called out the cabin window to Thomas Hudson. "Hey, get back out of this cabin, you boy, and come in your turn," he said to a big Negro in a straw hat. "I had to substitute on a few things. How's the meat?"
"Eddie says it's wonderful."
"Good. Let me have those letters and the list. Blowing a gale outside. I want to get out over the bar in this next tide. Sorry I'm so busy."
"See you next week, Ralph. Don't let me hold you up. Thanks very much, boy."
"I'll try to have everything next week. Need any money?"
"No, I'm all right from last week."
"Got plenty of it here if you want it. Okay, now, you, Lucius, what's your trouble? What you spending money on now?"
Thomas Hudson walked back along the dock where the Negroes were laughing at what the wind was doing to the girls in the women's cotton dresses, and then up the coral road to the Ponce de Leon.
"Tom," Mr. Bobby said, "come in and sit down. By God, where you been? We're just swept out and she's officially open. Come on and have the best one of the day."
"It's pretty early."
"Nonsense, that's good imported beer. We got dog's head ale, too."
He reached into a tub of ice, opened a bottle of Pilsner, and handed it to Thomas Hudson.
"You don't want a glass, do you? Put that down and then decide if you want to drink or not."
"I won't work then."
"Who gives a damn? You work too much as it is. You got a duty to yourself, Tom. Your one and only life. You can't just paint all the time."
"We were in the boat yesterday and I didn't work." Thomas Hudson was looking at the big canvas of the waterspouts that hung on the wall at the end of the bar. It was a good painting, Thomas Hudson thought. As good as he could do as of today, he thought.
"I got to hang her higher," Bobby said. "Some gentleman got excited last night and tried to climb into the skiff. I told him it would cost him $10,000 if he put his foot through her. Constable told him the same. Constable's got an idea for what he wants you to paint to hang in his home."
"What is it?"
"Constable wouldn't say, just that he had a very valuable idea and he had intention to discuss with you."
Thomas Hudson was looking at the canvas closely. It showed certain signs of wear.
"By God, she sure stands up," Bobby said proudly. "The other night, a gentleman let out a shout and threw a full mug of beer at the column of one of the waterspouts trying to break it down. You wouldn't have known she'd ever been hit, never dented her. Beer run off her like water. By God, Tom, you sure painted her solid."
"She'll only take about so much, though."
"By God," said Bobby, "I ain't seen nothing faze her yet, but I'm going to hang her higher just the same. That gentleman last night worried me."
He handed Thomas Hudson another bottle of the ice-cold Pilsner.
"Tom, I want to tell you how sorry I am about the fish. I know Eddie since we were boys, and I never heard him lie, about anything important, I mean. I mean, if you asked him to tell you something true..."
"It was a hell of a thing. I'm not going to tell anybody about it."
"That's the right way," Bobby said. "I just wanted you to know how sorry I was. Why don't you finish that beer and have a drink? We don't want to start feeling sad this early. What would make you feel good?"
"I feel good enough. I'm going to work this afternoon, and I don't want to get logy."
"Ah, well, if I can't break you out, maybe somebody will come in that I can. Look at that damn yacht.
She must have taken a beating coming across with that shallow draft.
Thomas Hudson looked out the open door and saw the handsome white houseboat-type craft coming up the channel. She was one of the type that chartered out of a mainland port to go down through the Florida Keys, and on a day such as yesterday, calm and flat, she could have crossed the Gulf Stream without incident, but today, she must have taken a beating with her shallow draft and so much superstructure. Thomas Hudson wondered that she'd been able to come in over the bar with the sea that was running. The houseboat ran up the harbor a little further to anchor, and Thomas Hudson and Bobby watched her from the doorway, all white and brass, and everyone that showed on her in whites.
"Customers," Mr. Bobby said. "Hope they're nice people. We haven't had a full-sized yacht in here since the tuna run was over."
"Who is she?"
"I never seen her before. Pretty boat, all right. Certainly not built for the Gulf, though."
"She probably left at midnight when it was calm, and this hit her on the way over."
"That's about it," Bobby said. "Must have been some rolling and some crashing. It's really blowing. Well, we'll see who they are shortly. Tom, let me make you something, boy. You make me nervous not drinking."
"All right, I'll have a gin and tonic."
"No tonic water. Joe took the last case up to the house."
"A whiskey sour, then."
"With Irish whiskey and no sugar," Bobby said. "Three of them. Here comes Roger."
Thomas Hudson saw him come through the open door. Roger came in. He was barefooted, wore a faded pair of dungarees, and an old striped fisherman's shirt that was shrunken from washings. You could see the back muscles move under it as he leaned forward and put his arms on the bar. In the dim light of Bobby's, his skin showed very dark, and his hair was salt and sun-streaked.
"They're still sleeping," he said to Thomas Hudson. "Somebody beat up Eddie, did you see?"
"He was having fights all last night," Bobby told him. "They didn't amount to anything."
"I don't like things to happen to Eddie," Roger said.
"Wasn't anything bad, Roger," Bobby assured him. "He was drinking and fighting people who wouldn't believe him. Nobody did anything wrong to him."
"I feel bad about David," Roger said to Thomas Hudson. "We shouldn't have ever let him do it."
"He's probably all right," Thomas Hudson said. "He was sleeping well. But it was my responsibility. I was the one to call it off."
"No, you trusted me."
"The father has the responsibility," Thomas Hudson said, "and I turned it over to you when I had no right to. It isn't anything to delegate."
"But I took it," Roger said. "I didn't think it was harming him, neither did Eddie."
"I know," Thomas Hudson said. "I didn't think it was either. I thought something else was at stake."
"So did I," Roger said. "But now I feel selfish and guilty as hell."
"I'm his father," Thomas Hudson said. "It was my fault."
"Damn bad thing about that fish," Bobby said, handing them the whiskey sours and taking one himself. "Let's drink to a bigger one."
"No," Roger said. "I don't want to ever see a bigger one."
"What's the matter with you, Roger?" Bobby asked.
"Nothing," Roger said. "I'm going to paint a couple of pictures for David."
"That's wonderful. Do you think you can get it?"
"With luck, maybe. I can see it, and I think I know how to do it."
"You can do it, all right. You can do anything. I wonder who's on the yacht."
"Look, Roger, you've been walking your remorse all over the island," Thomas Hudson said.
"Barefooted," he said. "I just brought mine down here by way of Captain Ralph's runboat." "I couldn't walk mine out, and I'm certainly not going to try and drink it out," Roger said. "This is a mighty nice drink, though, Bobby."
"Yes, sir," Bobby said. "I'll make you another one. Get that old remorse on the run."
"I had no business gambling with a kid," Roger said. "Somebody else's boy."
"It depends on what you were gambling for."
"No, it doesn't. You shouldn't gamble with kids."
"I know. I know what I was gambling for. It wasn't a fish, either."
"Sure," Roger said. "But it was the one you didn't need to do it to. The one you didn't need to ever let anything like that happen to."
"He'll be fine when he wakes up. You'll see. He's a very intact boy."
"He's my goddamned hero," Roger said.
"That's a damn sight better than when you used to be your own goddamned hero."
"Isn't it?" Roger said. "He's yours, too."
"I know it," Thomas Hudson said. "He's good for both of us."
"Roger," Mr. Bobby said, "are you and Tom any sort of kin?"
"Why?"
"I thought you were. You don't look too different."
"Thanks," Thomas Hudson said.
"Thank him yourself, Roger."
"Thank you very much, Bobby," Roger said. "Do you really think I look like this combination man and painter?"
"You look like quarter brothers, and the boys look like both of you."
"We're no kin," Thomas Hudson said.
We just used to live in the same town and make some of the same mistakes.
Well, the hell with it, Mr. Bobby said. Drink up and quit all this remorse talk. It don't sound good this time of day in a bar. I got remorse from Negroes, mates on charter boats, cooks off yachts, millionaires and their wives, big rum runners, grocery store people, one-eyed men off turtle boats, sons of bitches, anybody. Don't let's have no morning remorse. A big wind is the time to drink. We're through with remorse. That remorse is old stuff, anyway. Since they got the radio, everybody just listens to the BBC. There ain't no time and no room for remorse.
Do you listen to it, Bobby?
Just to Big Ben. The rest of it makes me restless.
Bobby, Roger said, you're a great and good man.
Neither, but I'm certainly pleased to see you looking more cheerful.
I am, said Roger. What sort of people do you think we'll get off that yacht?
Customers, said Bobby. Let's drink one more so I'll feel like serving them, however they are.
While Bobby was squeezing the limes and making the drinks, Roger said to Thomas Hudson, I didn't mean to be wet about Davy. You weren't. What I meant was, oh, hell. I'll try to work it out simply. That was a sound crack you made about when I was my own hero. I've got no business making cracks. You have, as far as I'm concerned. The trouble is, there hasn't been anything in life that was simple for such a damn long time, and I try to make it simple all the time. You're going to write straight and simple and good now. That's the start. What if I'm not straight and simple and good? Do you think I can write that way? Write how you are, but make it straight. I've got to try to understand it better, Tom. You are. Remember the last time I saw you before this summer was in New York with that cigarette butt bitch. She killed herself, Roger said. When? While I was up in the hills, before I went on to the coast and wrote that picture. I'm sorry, Thomas Hudson said. She was headed for it all the time, Roger said. I'm glad I stepped out in time. You wouldn't ever do that. I don't know, Roger said. I've seen it look very logical. One reason you wouldn't do it is because it would be a hell of an example for the boys. How would Dave feel? He'd probably understand. Anyway, when you get into that business that far, you don't think much about examples. Now you are talking wet. Bobby pushed over the drinks.
Roger, you talk that kind of stuff, you get even me depressed. I'm paid to listen to anything people say. But I don't want to hear my friends talk that way. Roger, you stop it.
I've stopped it.
Good, Bobby said. Drink up. We had a gentleman here from New York, lived down at the inn, and he used to come here and drink most of the day. All he used to talk about was how he was going to kill himself. Made everybody nervous half the winter. Constable warned him it was an illegal act. I tried to get Constable to warn him that talking about it was an illegal act, but Constable said he'd have to get an opinion on that from Nassau. After a while, people sort of got used to his project, and then a lot of drinkers started siding with him. Especially one day, he was talking to Big Harry, and he told Big Harry he was thinking of killing himself, and he wanted to take somebody with him. I'm your man, Big Harry told him. I'm who you've been looking for. So then Big Harry tries to encourage him that they should go to New York City and really pitch one and stay drunk until they couldn't stand it, and then jump off the highest part of the city straight into oblivion. I think Big Harry figured Oblivion was some sort of a suburb, probably an Irish neighborhood. Well, the suicide gentleman took kindly to this idea, and they'd talk it over every day. Others tried to get in on it and proposed they form an excursion of death seekers and just go as far as Nassau for the preliminaries. But Big Harry, he held out for New York City, and finally, he confided to the suicide gentleman that he couldn't stand this life no longer, and he was ready to go. Big Harry, he had to go out for a couple of days crawfishing on an order he had from Captain Ralph, and while he was gone, the suicide gentleman took to drinking too much, then he'd take some kind of ammonia from up north that would seem to sober him up, and he'd come down here to drink again, but it was accumulating in him some way. We all called him suicides by then, so I said to him, suicides, you better lay off, you'll never live to reach oblivion. I'm bound for it now, he says, I'm en route, I'm headed for it. Take the money for these drinks, I've made my dread decision. Here's your change, I said to him. I don't want no change. Keep it for Big Harry so he can have a drink before he joins me. So he goes out in a rush, and he dives off Johnny Black's dock into the channel with the tide going out, and it's dark and no moon, and nobody sees him anymore until he washes up on the point in 2 days. Everybody looked for him good that night, too. I figured he must have struck his head on some old concrete and went out with the tide. Big Harry come in, and he mourned him until the change was all drunk up. It was changed from a $20 bill, too. Then Big Harry says to me, "You know, Bobby, I think old Suicides was crazy." He was right, too, because when his family sent for him, the man who came explained to Commissioner old Suicides had suffered from a thing called mechanics depressive. You never had that, did you, Roger?
No, said Roger, and now I think I never will.
That's the stuff, Mr. Bobby said, and don't you ever fool with that old oblivion stuff.
Fuck oblivion, said Roger.
This ends Disc 4.
Chapter 11. Lunch was excellent. The steak was browned outside and striped by the grill. A knife slipped through the outer part, and inside the meat was tender and juicy. They all dipped up juice from their plates and put it on the mashed potatoes, and the juice made a lake in their creamy whiteness. The lima beans, cooked in butter, were firm. The cabbage lettuce was crisp and cold, and the grapefruit was chilly cold. Everyone was hungry with the wind, and Eddie came up and looked in while they were eating. His face looked very bad, and he said,
"What the hell you think of meat like that?"
"It's wonderful," young Tom said.
"Chew it good," Eddie said. "Don't waste that eating it fast."
"You can't chew it much or it's gone," young Tom told him.
"Have we got dessert, Eddie?" David asked.
"Sure, pie and ice cream."
"Oh boy," Andrew said. "Two pieces?"
"Enough to founder you. Ice cream's as hard as a rock."
"What kind of pie?"
"Loganberry pie."
"What kind of ice cream?"
"Coconut."
"Where'd we get it?"
"Runboat brought it."
They drank iced tea with the meal, and Roger and Thomas Hudson had coffee after the dessert.
"Eddie's a wonderful cook," Roger said.
"Some of it's appetite."
"That steak wasn't appetite, nor that salad, nor that pie."
"He is a fine cook," Thomas Hudson agreed. "Is the coffee all right?"
"Excellent."
"Papa," young Tom asked, "if the people on the yacht go to Mr. Bobby's, can we go down and practice Andy being a rummy on them?"
"Mr. Bobby might not like it. He might get in bad with the constable."
"I'll go down and tell Mr. Bobby, and I'll speak to Constable. He's a friend of ours."
"All right. You tell Mr. Bobby and keep a lookout for when the yacht people show up. What will we do about Dave?"
"Can't we carry him? He'd look good that way."
"I'll put on Tom's sneakers and walk," David said. "Have you got it worked out, Tommy?"
"We can make it up as we go along," young Tom said.
"Can you still turn your eyelids inside out?"
"Oh, sure," said David.
"Don't do it now, please," Andrew said. "I don't want to be sick right after lunch."
"For a dime, I'd make you throw up now, horseman."
"No, please don't. Later on, I won't mind."
"Do you want me to go with you?" Roger asked young Tom.
"I'd love it,"
young Tom said. "We can work it out together."
"Let's go, then," Roger said. "Why don't you take a nap, Davy?"
"I might," said David. "I'll read till I go to sleep. What are you going to do, Papa?"
"I'm going to work in the lee out on the porch."
"I'll lie out there on the cot and watch you work. Will you mind?"
"No, make me work better."
"We'll be back," Roger said. "What about you, Andy?"
"I'd like to come and study it, but I think I better not because the people might be there."
"That's smart," young Tom said. "You're smart, horseman." They went off, and Thomas Hudson worked all afternoon. Andy watched for a while and then went out somewhere, and David watched and read and did not talk. Thomas Hudson wanted to paint the leap of the fish first because painting him in the water was going to be much more difficult, and he made 2 sketches, neither of which he liked, and finally a 3rd one that he did like.
"Do you think that gets it, Davy?"
"Gee, Papa, it looks wonderful. But water comes up with him when he comes out, doesn't it? I mean, not just when he splashed back."
"It must," his father agreed, "because he has to burst the surface."
"He came up so long. A lot must have come up. I suppose it really drips off him or pours off him if you could see it fast enough. Is he on his way up or on his way down?"
"This is just a sketch. I thought of him as just at the top."
"I know it's just a sketch, Papa. You forgive me if I butt in. I don't mean to act as though I knew."
I'd like you to tell me. You know who'd know would be Eddie. He sees faster than a camera, and he remembers. Don't you think Eddie is a great man? Of course he is. Practically nobody knows about Eddie. Tommy does, of course. I like Eddie better than anybody except you and Mr. Davis. He cooks just like he loved it, and he knows so much, and he can do anything. Look what he did with the shark, and look how he went overboard yesterday after the fish. And last night, people beating him up because they didn't believe him. But, Papa, Eddie isn't tragic. No, he's happy. Even today, after he was all beaten up, he was happy. And I'm sure he was happy that he went in after him. Of course. I wish Mr. Davis was happy the way Eddie is. Mr. Davis is more complicated than Eddie. I know it. But I can remember when he used to be careless happy. I know Mr. Davis very well, Papa. He's pretty happy now. I know he's lost the carelessness, though. I didn't mean a bad carelessness. I didn't either. But there is some sort of a sureness that he's lost. I know it, David said. I wish he'd find it. Maybe he will when he writes again. You see, Eddie's happy because he does something well and does it every day. I guess Mr. Davis can't do his every day the way you do and Eddie does. No, and there are other things. I know. I know too much for a kid, Papa. Tommy knows 20 times as much as I do and knows the damnedest things, and they don't hurt him. But everything I know hurts me. I don't know why it should, either. You mean that you feel it? I feel it, and it does something to me. It's like a vicarious sin, if there is any such thing. I see. Papa, you excuse me for talking seriously. I know it isn't polite. But I like to sometimes because there's so much we don't know, and then when we do know, it comes so fast it goes over you like a wave, the way the waves are today. You can always ask me anything, Davy. I know. Thank you very much. I'll wait, I guess, on some things. There's some, I guess, you can only learn for yourself, probably. Do you think we better do this rummy business with Tom and Andy at Bobby's? Remember, I got in trouble about the man saying you were always drunk. I remember when he'd seen me drunk on wine twice in 3 years, but let's not talk about it. This at Mr. Bobby's will be a good alibi in case I ever did drink. If I did it twice with that man, I might do it 3 times. No, I think this is a good thing to do, Papa. Have you done it lately, the pretend rummy scene? Tom and I do some pretty good ones, but with Andy, they're much better. Andy's sort of a genius on them. He can do horrible ones. Mine are sort of special. What have you done lately? Thomas Hudson went on drawing. Did you ever see me do the idiot brother, the Mongolian idiot? Never. How do you like it now, Davy? Thomas Hudson showed him the sketch. It's fine, David said. Now I see what you were after. It's when he hangs in the air just before he falls. Can I really have the painting, Papa? Sure. I'll take care of it. There'll be 2. I'll only take 1 to school, and I'll keep 1 at home at Mother's. Or would you rather keep it here? No, she might like it. Tell me about some others that you did, Thomas Hudson said. We used to have some awful ones on trains. Trains are the best because of the sort of people, I guess. You don't get those sort of people concentrated almost anywhere except on trains, and then they can't get away. Thomas Hudson heard Roger talking in the other room and started to clean up and put away his gear. Young Tom came in and said, "How are you, Papa? Did you work well? May I see it?" Thomas Hudson showed him the 2 sketches, and he said, "I like them both." "Do you like one better than the other?" David asked him. "No, they're both fine," he said. Thomas Hudson could see he was in a hurry and that his mind was on something. "How's it coming?" David asked him. "It's terrific," young Tom said. "It will be wonderful if we do it right. They're all down there now, and we've been working on them all afternoon. We saw Mr. Bobby and Constable before they came. The way it's been so far is that Mr. Davis is sodden, and I've been trying to dissuade him." "You didn't overdo it?" "Hell no," young Tom said. "You ought to have seen Mr. Davis. Every drink made a difference in him, but only imperceptibly." "What was he drinking?" "Tea. Bobby's got it in a rum bottle. He's got a gin bottle fixed with water for Andy." How did you try to dissuade Mr. Davis? I pled with him, but so that they couldn't hear me. Mr. Bobby's in it too, but he's using real liquor. We better get down there, David said, before Mr. Bobby gets too far ahead. How's Mr. Davis feeling? Wonderful. He's a great, great artist, Dave.
Where's Andy? Downstairs, practicing part of it in front of a mirror.
Is Eddie going to be in it?
Eddie and Joseph are both going to be in it.
They'll never remember. They only have one line.
Eddie can remember one line, but I don't know about Joseph.
He just repeats it after Eddie.
Is Constable in it?
Sure.
How many of them are there?
7, with 2 girls, one nice-looking and one wonderful. She's sorry for Mr. Davis already.
Oh, boy, said David, let's go.
How are you going to get down there, young Tom asked David.
I'll carry him, Thomas Hudson said.
Please, Papa, let me wear sneakers, David said. Let me wear Tommy's sneakers. I'll walk on the side of my feet, and it won't hurt them, and it will look good.
All right, we might as well go. Where's Roger?
He's having a quick one with Eddie for his art, young Tom said. He was at bat a long time on that tee, Papa.
The wind was still blowing hard outside when they went into the Ponce de Leon. The people from the yacht were at the bar drinking rum swizzles. They were a nice-looking lot of people, tanned and dressed in whites, and they were polite and made room at the bar. 2 men and a girl were at one end where the slot machine was, and 3 men and the other girl were at the other end nearest the door. It was the lovely-looking girl who was at the slot machine end. But the other girl was awfully nice-looking, too. Roger, Thomas Hudson, and the boys came in straight. David even tried not to limp. Mr. Bobby looked at Roger and said,
"You back?"
Roger nodded hopelessly, and Bobby put the rum bottle and a glass on the bar in front of him. Roger reached for it and didn't say anything.
"You drinking, Hudson?"
Bobby said to Thomas Hudson. His face was stern and righteous. Thomas Hudson nodded.
"You ought to cut it out," Bobby said. "There's a goddamn limit to everything."
"I just want a little rum, Bobby."
"That stuff he's drinking?"
"No, Bacardi." Mr. Bobby poured a glass and handed it to Thomas Hudson.
"Take it," he said, "though you know I shouldn't serve you."
Thomas Hudson drank the glass at a gulp, and it was warming and inspiring. "Give me another," Thomas Hudson said.
"In 20 minutes, Hudson," Bobby said. He looked at the clock behind the bar.
By now, the people were paying a little attention, but politely.
"What are you drinking, sport?"
Mr. Bobby asked David.
"You know damn well I'm off the stuff," David said to him severely. "Since when?"
"Since last night, you know damn well."
"Excuse me,"
Mr. Bobby said. He took a quick one himself.
"How the hell am I to keep track of you goddamn delinquents? All I ask is you get that Hudson out of here when I've got decent trade."
"I'm drinking quietly," Thomas Hudson said.
"You better."
Mr. Bobby corked the bottle in front of Roger and put it back on the shelf. Young Tom nodded to him approvingly and whispered to Roger. Roger lowered his head on his hands. Then he raised his head and pointed at the bottle. Young Tom shook his head. Bobby picked up the bottle, uncorked it, and set it down in front of Roger.
"Drink yourself to death," he said. "I won't lose any sleep."
By now, the 2 groups were watching this pretty closely, but still politely. They were slumming all right, but they were polite, and they seemed nice people. Then Roger spoke for the first time.
"Give the little rat a drink," he said to Bobby. "What will you have, son?"
Mr. Bobby asked Andy.
"Gin,"
Andy said. Thomas Hudson was careful not to watch the people, but he could feel them. Bobby put the bottle in front of Andy and set a glass by it. Andy poured the glass full and lifted it to Bobby.
"Here's to you, Mr. Bobby," he said. "The first one all day."
"Drink up," said Bobby. "You come in late."
"Papa had his money," David said, "his birthday money from Mother."
Young Tom looked up in his father's face and started to cry. He kept himself from actually crying, but it was sad to see, and it was not overdone. Nobody spoke until Andy said,
"I'd like another gin, please, Mr. Bobby."
"Pour your own," said Bobby, "you poor unfortunate child."
Then he turned to Thomas Hudson.
"Hudson," he said, "have another and get out."
"I can stay as long as I'm quiet," Thomas Hudson said.
If I know you, you won't be quiet for long,
Bobby said vindictively. Roger pointed toward the bottle, and young Tom hung onto his sleeve. He'd controlled his tears, and he was being brave and good.
Mr. Davis, he said, you don't have to.
Roger did not say anything, and Mr. Bobby put the bottle in front of him again.
Mr. Davis, you have to write tonight, young Tom said. You know you promised to write tonight.
What do you think I'm drinking for? Roger said to him.
But, Mr. Davis, you didn't have to drink this much when you wrote The Storm.
Why don't you shut up? Roger said to him.
Young Tom was patient and brave and long-suffering.
I will, Mr. Davis. I only do it because you asked me to. Can't we go back to the house?
You're a good kid, Tom, Roger said, but we're staying here.
For very long, Mr. Davis?
To the goddamn end.
I don't think we need to, Mr. Davis, young Tom said. Really, I don't. And you know if you get so you can't see, you won't be able to write.
I'll dictate, Roger said, like Milton.
I know you dictate beautifully, young Tom said, but this morning when Miss Phelps tried to take it off the machine, it was mostly music.
I'm writing an opera, Roger said.
I know you'll write a wonderful opera, Mr. Davis, but don't you think we ought to finish the novel first? You took a big advance on the novel.
Finish it yourself, Roger said. You ought to know the plot by now.
I know the plot, Mr. Davis, and it's a lovely plot, but it has that same girl in it that you had die in that other book, and people may be confused.
Dumas did the same thing.
Don't badger him, Thomas Hudson said to young Tom. How can he write if you badger him all the time?
Mr. Davis, couldn't you just get a really good secretary to write it for you? I've heard that novelists did that.
No, too expensive.
You want me to help you, Roger? Thomas Hudson asked.
Yes, you can paint it.
That's wonderful, young Tom said. Will you truly, Papa?
I'll paint it in a day, Thomas Hudson said. Paint it upside down like Michelangelo, Roger said. Paint it big enough so King George can read it without his spectacles.
Are you going to paint it, Papa? David asked.
Yes.
Good, David said. That's the first sensible thing I've heard. It won't be too difficult, Papa?
Hell no, it's probably too simple. Who's the girl?
That girl Mr. Davis always has.
Paint her in half a day, Thomas Hudson said.
Paint her upside down, Roger said.
Keep it clean, Thomas Hudson told him.
Mr. Bobby, may I have another slug?
Andy asked.
How many have you had, son? Bobby asked him.
Only two.
Go ahead, Bobby told him and handed him the bottle. Listen, Hudson, when are you going to get that picture out of here?
Haven't you had any offers on it?
No, Bobby said, and it clutters the place up. Besides, it makes me goddamn nervous. I want it out of here.
Pardon me, one of the men from the yacht spoke to Roger. Is that canvas for sale?
Who spoke to you? Roger looked at him.
No one, the man said. You're Roger Davis, aren't you?
You're damn right I am.
If your friend painted that canvas and it is for sale, I'd like to discuss the price with him, the man said, turning. You're Thomas Hudson, aren't you?
Hudson is the name.
Is the canvas for sale?
No, Thomas Hudson told him. I'm sorry.
But the bartender said...
He's crazy, Thomas Hudson told him. He's an awfully good fellow, but he's crazy.
Mr. Bobby, may I please have another gin?
Andrew asked very politely.
Certainly, my little man, Bobby said and served it. Do you know what they ought to do? They ought to put your healthy, charming face on the label of those gin bottles instead of that idiotic collection of berries. Hudson, why don't you design a suitable label for a gin bottle that would reproduce the childish charm of young Andy's face?
We could launch a brand, Roger said. They've got Old Tom Gin. Why shouldn't we put out Merry Andrew?
I'll put up the money, said Bobby. We can make the gin here on the island. The little lads can bottle it and affix the labels. We can sell it wholesale and in retail.
It would be a return to craftsmanship, Roger said. Like William Morris.
What would we make the gin from, Mr. Bobby? Andrew asked.
From bonefish, Bobby said. And from conches.
The yacht people did not look at Roger or Thomas Hudson nor at the boys now. They were watching Bobby and they looked worried.
About that canvas, the one man said.
What canvas are you referring to, my good man? Bobby asked him, downing another quick one.
The very big canvas with the three waterspouts and the man in a dinghy.
Where? Asked Bobby.
There, said the man.
Begging your pardon, sir, I think you've had enough. This is a respectable place. We don't run to waterspouts and men in dinghies here.
I mean the picture there.
Don't provoke me, sir. There's no picture there. If there was a painting in here, it would be above the bar where paintings belong, and it would be a nude reclining full length in a proper ship-shaped manner.
I mean that picture there.
What picture? Where?
There.
I'd be happy to fix your bromo seltzer, sir, or call you a rickshaw, Bobby said.
A rickshaw?
Yes, a goddamn rickshaw, if you want it straight to your face. You're a rickshaw, and you've had enough.
Mr. Bobby, Andy asked very politely, do you think I've had enough?
No, my dear boy, of course not. Serve yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Bobby, Andy said. This is 4.
I wish it was 100, Bobby said. You're the pride of my heart.
What do you say we get out of here, Hal? One of the men said to the man who wanted to buy the picture.
I'd like to pick up that canvas, the other told him, if I can get it for a decent price.
I'd like to get out of here, the first man insisted. Fun's fun and all that, but watching children drink is a little too much.
Are you really serving that little boy gin?
The nice-looking blonde girl at the end of the bar toward the door asked Bobby. She was a tall girl with very fair hair and pleasant freckles. They were not redhead freckles, but were the sort blondes get when they have skins that tan instead of burn.
Yes, ma'am.
I think it's shameful, the girl said. It's disgusting, and it's shameful, and it's criminal.
Roger avoided looking at the girl, and Thomas Hudson kept his eyes down.
What would you like him to drink, ma'am? Bobby asked.
Nothing. He shouldn't have anything to drink.
Hardly seems fair, Bobby said.
What do you mean, fair? Do you think it's fair to poison a child with alcohol?
See, Papa, young Tom said, I thought it was wrong for Andy to drink.
He's the only one of the three who drinks, ma'am, since sport here stopped it,
Bobby tried to reason with her.
Do you think it's fair to deprive the only one in a family of three boys of what little pleasure he gets?
Fair, the girl said. I think you're a monster. And you're another monster, she said to Roger. And you're another monster, too, she said to Thomas Hudson. You're all horrible, and I hate you.
There were tears in her eyes, and she turned her back on the boys and Mr. Bobby and said to the men with her,
Won't any of you do anything about it?
I think it's a joke, one of the men said to her, like that rude waiter they hired at a party, or like double talk.
No, it's not a joke. That dreadful man gives him gin. It's horrible, and it's tragic.
Mr. Bobby, Tom asked, is 5 my limit?
For today, Bobby said. I wouldn't want you to do anything to shock the lady.
Oh, get me out of here, the girl said. I won't watch it.
She started to cry, and 2 of the men went out with her, and Thomas Hudson and Roger and the boys all felt quite bad. The other girl, the really lovely-looking one, came over. She had a beautiful face and clear brown skin and tawny hair. She wore slacks, but she was built wonderfully as far as Thomas Hudson could see, and her hair was silky and it swung when she walked. He knew he had seen her before.
It isn't really gin, is it? She said to Roger.
No, of course not.
I'll go out and tell her, she said. She really feels awfully badly.
She went out the door and she smiled at them as she went out. She was a wonderful-looking girl.
Now it's over, Papa, Andy said. Can we have Cokes?
I'd like a beer, Papa, if it wouldn't make that lady feel bad, young Tom said.
I don't think she'd feel badly about a beer, Thomas Hudson said. Can I buy you a drink? He asked the man who wanted to buy the picture. I'm sorry if we were too stupid.
No, the man said. Very interesting. The whole thing was very interesting to me. Fascinating. I've always been interested in writers and artists. Were you all improvising?
Yes, said Thomas Hudson.
Now, about that canvas.
It belongs to Mr. Saunders, Thomas Hudson explained to him. I painted it for him as a present. I don't think he wants to sell it, but it's his and he can do whatever he likes with it.
I want to keep her, Bobby said. Don't offer me a lot of money for her because it would just make me feel bad.
I would really like to have it,
So would I, goddammit, said Bobby, and I've got it.
But, Mr. Saunders, that is a valuable canvas to have in a place like this. Bobby was getting angry.
Leave me alone, will you? He said to the man. We were having a wonderful time, as good a time as I ever had, and women have to cry and ball up everything. I know she meant right, but what the hell? Meant right gets you quicker than anything else. My old woman means right and does right, and it beats the hell out of me every day. The hell with means right. Now you're here and you think you can take my picture just because you want it?
But, Mr. Saunders, you said yourself you wanted the picture out of here and that it was for sale.
That was all balls, Bobby said. That was when we were having fun.
Then the picture is not for sale.
No, the picture is not for sale, rent, nor charter.
Well, said the man, here's my card in case it ever is for sale.
That's fine, said Bobby. Tom may have some up at his place he wants to sell. What about it, Tom?
I don't think so, Thomas Hudson said. I'd like to come up and see them, the man told him. I'm not showing anything now, Thomas Hudson answered. I'll give you the address of the gallery in New York if you'd like it. Thank you. Will you write it here? The man had a fountain pen with him, and he wrote the address on the back of one of his cards and gave another card to Thomas Hudson. Then the man thanked Thomas Hudson again and asked if he might offer him a drink. Can you give me any idea about the prices of the larger canvases?
No, Thomas Hudson said, but the dealer will be able to. I'll see him as soon as I'm back in town. This canvas is extremely interesting.
Thank you, Thomas Hudson said. You're quite sure it can't be sold?
Jesus, Bobby said. Stop it, will you? That's my picture. I had the idea for it, and Tom painted it for me.
The man looked as though what he had thought of as the charades were beginning again, so he smiled with much good fellowship.
I don't like to be insistent.
You're just about as insistent as a goddamn loggerhead, Bobby told him. Come on, have a drink on me and forget it.
The boys were talking with Roger. It was pretty good while it lasted, wasn't it, Mr. Davis? Young Tom asked. I didn't overdo it too badly, did I?
It was fine, Roger said. Dave didn't have much, though.
I was just getting ready to be a monster, David said.
You'd have killed her, I think, young Tom said. She was hurt pretty badly already.
Were you going to come up as a monster?
I had my eyelids inside out and all ready to come up, David told him. I was bent down fixing myself to come up when we stopped.
It was bad luck. She was such a nice woman, Andy said. I hadn't started to let it have any effect on me yet. I guess now we won't have any chance to do another one.
Wasn't Mr. Bobby wonderful? Young Tom asked. Boy, you were swell, Mr. Bobby.
Sure was a pity to stop, Bobby said. And Constable hadn't even come in yet. I was just beginning to get worked up. I know just how those great actors must feel.
The girl came in through the door. As she came in, the wind blew her sweater against her and blew her hair as she turned to Roger. She wouldn't come back, but it's all right. She's fine now.
Will you have a drink with us? Roger asked her.
I'd love to.
Roger told her all of their names, and she said she was Audrey Bruce.
Can I come up and see your pictures?
Of course, Thomas Hudson said. I'd like to come with Miss Bruce, the man of persistence said.
Are you her father? Roger asked him.
No, but I'm a very old friend.
You can't come, Roger said. You have to wait for Very Old Friends Day or get a card from the committee.
Please don't be rude to him, she said to Roger.
I'm afraid I have been.
Don't be anymore.
Fine.
Let's be pleasant.
Good.
I like Tom's line about that same girl that is in all your books.
Did you really like it? Young Tom asked her. It isn't really accurate. I was teasing Mr. Davis.
I thought it was a little bit accurate.
You come up to the house, Roger told her.
Do I bring my friends?
No.
None of them.
Do you want them very much?
No.
Good.
Around what time of day do I come up to the house?
Anytime, Thomas Hudson said.
Do I stay for lunch?
Naturally, Roger said.
This sounds like a splendid island, she said. I'm so glad we're all pleasant.
David can show you how he was going to be a monster when we called it off, Andy said to her.
Oh, dear. She said, we'll have absolutely everything.
How long are you staying? Young Tom asked her.
I don't know.
How long is the yacht staying? Roger asked.
I don't know.
What do you know? Roger asked.
I mean it pleasantly. Not very much. What about you?
I think you're lovely, Roger said.
Oh, she said. Thank you very much.
Will you stay for a while?
I don't know. I might.
Will you come up to the house now and have a drink instead of having it here? Roger asked her.
Let's have one here, she said. It's awfully nice here.